This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost, a great solution if you are in need of a blog or a website. Let's say you want to do a fan website about Once Upon a Time, and you don't want to spend a lot of money, and you're not very technical, so you don't really know how to set up a blog. Well, Bluehost is a great solution. Even I was able to start my blog using Bluehost, and it's very affordable, just $6.95 per month. Many more advantages. Just check it out for yourself. Go to sqpn.com/Bluehost for more information. And by Geek Priest, Confessions of a New Media Pioneer, the new book that I've written a while ago, and there is also a lot of talk about fairy tales in there, and even about Once Upon a Time, so you might want to check it out. You can buy it at the Amazon store, but just don't forget to click on the link on our website before you do that, and your purchase will help support our show. Thanks in advance for all your support.
What is it?
Someone's leaving Neverland.
Where? How shall we stop them?
It's too late. Don't worry, Felix.
We simply need to get word to our friends on the ground.
In Storybrooke?
They can handle this.
All it does is move up our timetable a touch. We need to get Henry ready.
I need to have a chat with our friend in the other cage.
Welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. We're going to talk about the seventh episode of the third season. Something dark and something hollow or hello or whatever it is. And I'm going to talk with my friends, not in the cage, but in Skype. Lisa is joining us all the way from Texas. How is life in Texas?
It's good.
Is it getting cold or is it still hot?
We're actually going to have a cold front tonight. It's supposed to be a high of like 60.
Mm-hmm. She's so excited about that.
I know. It's great. Our lows might hit 38.
Also, joining us today, you already heard her, Deborah.
Yes, and it's cold here.
Must be a lot colder.
I gotta say, I'm in Nebraska and it's cold.
Mm. And also joining us, Inge from Groningen. That's a little bit closer to where I live. And is it cold or is it wet or both?
It's everything.
It's everything at once. It's just nasty.
It's just Dutch weather, you know?
Yeah.
Rain, cold, wind.
Same here. It's really not very nice. I'm Father Roderick, as usual, one of the hosts of this show. And perhaps later on we might be joined by other panel members. But for now, you'll have to do with us. And we're going to dive straight in with Ariel.
You know I love Snow and Charming, but can I be honest? It's kind of nice not having them around.
Happy?
No, really. It's only been 5 days, but it's the first 5 days with no killing.
No race.
No giant stepping on my Miata.
It has been peaceful.
Enough!
I don't want to hear any more of this. Snow and Charmin are coming back, and everything will remain normal.
Hi! I'm Ariel.
And we are back in Storybrooke with Ariel, and at least part of the episode is taking place in Storybrooke. So let's do the rounds before we talk about the details. Just a rating for the show. Inge, I know that you didn't particularly like this episode, at least judging from what you posted on Facebook.
Well, it kind of has nice elements, but to me the story moves along too slowly. It needs more pepper.
Okay, you just want to get the season three over with by the end of the winter, right? What about you, Deborah? This is the first time that we actually get to talk about Ariel, because you missed last week, and I know. Ariel is one of your favorite characters.
No, she's one of your favorite characters.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, she is very Ariel-esque, I guess. She doesn't impress me at this point, but that's...
Okay.
But you know what? I am so happy we went back to Storybrooke.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just so happy. I'm like, oh, what a nice change of pace.
Daylight. No matter that it's still raining there. In May.
Yeah, I enjoyed this. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give it an 8.
Very good. What about you, Lisa?
I actually enjoyed it too. I liked seeing the scene you just played. The clip was actually one of my favorite moments. I loved seeing the dwarves sitting around, you know, kind of like, great, no one's going to do this to me. No one's going to do this to me. We can just relax.
Have
I liked
a picnic.
Seeing them kind of, they made a reference to Ruby. We saw Granny's mm-hmm. diner, you know, mm-hmm. I liked it. It felt, this episode felt more like the first season to me. And I liked that.
Yeah. Well, we get to see a lot of regulars that we missed for a couple of weeks. So, yeah, that was what I liked about the show as well. It's just a lot of, oh, yeah, they're still around. And there were some funny quotes. I did miss Regina a little bit in this episode. I thought she had such a brilliant role last week. I was like, oh, God, bring her back. I want more funny quotes. But we had some great one-liners in this episode as well. I think it was because I saw Inga's update on Facebook saying that she didn't really enjoy it too much, or that it was too slow, that I had very low expectations. So I was watching it and was like, you know what? Actually, it's not too bad. I mean, there is some cringeworthy CGI as usual, but well, I should be over that by now. But yeah, I thought it were some good developments. It became a little bit, you know what, I think that the thing that made this more of a 7 out of 10 or perhaps even a 6.5 out of 10 was the ending. I was like, I'm so used to getting a reveal or something that is like, or that makes you want to look forward to what happens next, and the reveal was kind of like, okay, well, we'll see next week, you know. It didn't really wake me up in a way.
I think that's why Inga called it a filler episode.
I guess, yeah. It's like, I want something a little bit more exciting, but perhaps
you didn't
just
like the big reveal in the box?
Which box?
The reveal in the box?
Other box.
Of the box.
The individual.
The cage.
Oh,
the cage.
That. Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that, what we thought about it. I see in at least Shelly's name in the Skype
that was,
box here.
That
but
was Shelly.
Is she there?
I'm here.
That was,
oh,
sorry,
good. I just see one white mysterious square. So I was unaware if that was some symbolic representation of Pandora's box and whether there was something in there.
No, I just slipped in unawares.
So what was your take on this episode?
Well, I actually agreed with Inga this time. I thought it was probably a 6. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the worst they've ever done, but I was a little tiny bit disappointed. I like the one-liners. I completely did not like the scene in Dark Hollow, which was the name of the episode. We'll talk themes about mm-hmm. the belief and the heroism, I'm sure, so we'll go into that later. But I know they can do so much more, and I know every episode can't be Manhattan, but I still want every episode to be Manhattan.
I agree. And especially because the teaser last week was great. And I was like, oh, this is going to be an awesome episode. It's dark and you've got these ghosts or shadows. And I was expecting a lot. And then, yeah, ultimately it's like, huh. Yeah, they really showed us the best parts. And that was about it.
And who liked Ariel and Belle together?
I loved it.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
They have a great chemistry.
Okay, I'm the odd one out there.
Well, I'm the odd one too. I was like, oh, I'm Guy, so I don't get this. But no, I didn't think it worked. But oh,
between
well.
Between that and Bay and Hook fighting over Emma, it was just like, oh,
over
come on,
a lighter.
Guys, move. Come on.
Oh, well, these are fairy tales. So we're back in Storybrooke. And apparently, it is now up to Belle for some reason to make the reference to this other television series called The Dome by doing the magical equivalent of that. And in order to do that, for some reason, they have to go back into the mines, find a vein with fairy dust, or what is it now, pixie dust or fairy dust?
Fairy dust.
Oh, I always get confused. And she has to pour a little bit of the magic sauce that Rumpel concocted, and through the veins in the ground somehow that creates a sphere that definitely reminded me of The Dome and The Simpsons movie. And it was a little bit too similar. Even the special effects were similar. So I guess they was like, ah, yeah, we have that algorithm lying around. Let's just use it for our story as well. But anyway, I still don't understand why it had to be Belle who poured it, and then the what's her name, sister Blue Fairy. She's like, no, you have to do it, and I guess they were just trying to do play on the heroism theme, and that she had to be a hero for some reason. But
that was why Belle went to she wanted to be the hero. That's why she sacrificed herself for her kingdom way back in that first season.
Oh.
Well,
okay.
And I thought that the Blue Fairy could... I mean, my thought was, that's dark magic. Blue Fairy probably doesn't want to get involved with dark magic. Yeah. So I thought she was like, no, you're good. You do it.
Huh.
Yeah, I thought it also. I thought maybe she was afraid of getting tainted or in a way because of the kind of the two kinds of magic there seem to be. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It also fit with their theme throughout this episode about believing in yourself, trying to be the hero and then believing in yourself. Those were the two main things I picked out. So when she said you just need to believe in yourself, and then which dwarf was it that quipped, you might want to believe a little harder?
Yeah, that was grumpy. That was funny. And then immediately it works and you get all the laser beams and stuff. We get to see and there was the first funny quote, like no time for whistling, boys. It's time to do what is
swinging.
It? Let's get swinging. That was funny. And then we get to see the two guys in the red car and in purple clothes. They look a little bit out of place. They're racing to get under the dome. We briefly get a glimpse of their map. Which indicates that Storybrooke is actually located in Maine. My co-host from Secrets of Star Wars, Dom Bettinelli, when he saw that in the episode, he's like, that's where I grew up. I am from Fairy Tale Land.
That explains it.
So they barely get under the dome, and just like in The Dome, the television series, you know, the thing seems to have like laser beam quality, so it just chops off the part of their car. So I guess a little bit less gruesome than the cow that gets cut in half in the dome, under the dome. That's the name of the series. And we get a glimpse of the license plate, and of course when I'm watching this episode I'm taking notes, so I was like, oh, this could be a clue, and then not really. So it's a license plate from Minnesota, 0920EAW, and you Google it and you find absolutely nothing. I was like, okay, no clues there.
No reference. I was sure because they kept saying the others are coming. And my kids, one of them goes, what's the others? And I go, oh, that was when the Lost went like kind of bad in that season. You know? So
yeah.
I thought maybe the license plate was a Lost reference.
Yeah.
I was
not
very,
really.
Very hesitant about introducing these two outsiders from the home office until later in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And then. Yeah. The minute the thing we'll talk about later was revealed, I knew exactly who they were. I mean, there wasn't any question.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it is. It was a bit strange. I was like, are these Lost Boys as well? I mean, they did remind me a little bit of Peter Pan, and well, I know why. But
they looked a little bit, indeed, a bit odd. But also with the glasses, also like a little bit like nerds, but not quite.
Yeah,
so.
And they had that British accent.
Yes.
Yeah. The moment I heard the British accent, I was, I know exactly where they come from. They are from the Home Office.
Okay.
Because that's the only people in the series who have a British accent. It's people who work for Pan.
Hmm. Yeah, perhaps. I was a bit. I didn't see it coming, though. Their true identity. So that was nicely set up. Then we move from Storybrooke. Unfortunately, back to the island where it's still dark and where they still have the fake palm tree standing there in this Canadian forest. I mean, don't you think that they've just like rented a number of plants in pots and they just put them in the forest? And I mean, it doesn't really look tropical at all to me. It looks gold.
But it is better than that CGI. So
I know,
you gotta
weigh
one
plants.
Or the other.
Oh, yeah. God forbid they do CGI plans.
Well, last week when Snow jumped off that cliff, I was very certain that that was the same cliff that Henry and Pan jumped off of when they, you know, or the shot was the same.
Probably.
When they did their leap of believing faith to fly. Yeah,
but that's the purpose of this show. You need to believe it's real. And it is a true leap of faith with this bad CGI.
It reminds me of Battlestar Galactica, where if there's a Viper launch, it's always the same Viper that gets launched.
Yes, yes. Cutting corners, cutting costs. I mean, it is expensive to do a television show with so many episodes. So, well, you know what? It's about the same. If the story is okay, you won't hear me complain. If the story of an episode is not very good, then you start to notice all these moments where you're like,
Could you believe it had only been 5 days?
Yeah, how weird is that? It feels like 5 weeks.
Yes, and it fit in well with forever. Regina saying, I've spent a week camping with the Charmings.
Yes.
You know, but it just didn't really feel like it had only been 5 days. But,
I was really surprised when they said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for us, it feels like an eternity.
And so does this mean then that time in Neverland passing, while they don't age or change in Neverland, the time is consistently passing with the other realms, with the days?
I guess
We had talked about, well, you know, if you spend a week in Neverland, you come back and it's only been a day or 15 minutes.
It's like Inception. Have you seen that movie where the dream time is a lot slower than the real time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But this answered that question. So,
we see that Rumple... has a plan. He can't talk about it because otherwise Peter Pan will know. So he enchants what I thought was a seashell. Apparently it's a sand dollar. We don't have those in the Netherlands, so I assumed
it was
something.
That's a kind of seashell.
Well, whatever. And then...
it's more like a sea urchin. It's alive.
Oh, okay.
You.
And it's a living thing.
Well, now it's dead because it's out of the water, but yeah.
And then Ariel is like...
A sand dollar? What am I supposed to do with it?
Oh, wait, that's not Ariel. That's Belle. Wait.
Yeah.
I was like, she sounds very much like Belle without fins. So anyway, so Ariel is sent to Storybrooke. She has the bracelet, so she can have legs for 24 hours. I don't know exactly why that time limit. It's probably to give her an incentive to return or something.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Hmm.
So she wouldn't go find Eric this time.
Yeah, probably. And then we hear that Peter Pan has friends on the ground, which means Storybrooke. I was wondering, on the ground, would he mean like, or does that imply that Neverland is somewhere in the sky? Or is it just a matter of saying?
No, it's an idiom.
It's a phrase.
Okay.
Yeah.
So boots on the ground.
Yeah, but I'm always looking for like a hidden layer of meaning. But perhaps I was just overreaching here. And then he announces we need to get Henry ready. We still don't know exactly ready for what and why this has accelerated their plans. Then we hear and then he needs to have a chat with the person in the other cage. The way he talked about it, I was constantly thinking of a man being in the cage. But so our friend in the cage. And then we get to Charming and Snow still bickering. That goes on for about half the episode. Fortunately, it was resolved this time because I was getting a little bit tired of it. And they come up with this great plan of stealing Pan's shadow. And then they can use the shadow of Peter Pan to fly back to the real world, I guess. And then we switch back to Storybrooke, where the home office is observing Ariel as she arrives on the shore. And then we go to... we go back to Granny's place, and the opening shot is a cheeseburger with soggy looking fries placed in front of her, and wow, that is so strange. She is refusing to eat the soggy fries and the fatty cheeseburger. But fortunately, there's a psychologist who is there to tell us that actually it is the fourth cheeseburger that she turned down this week alone.
What? Remember that the cheeseburger is Belle's favorite dish. It's the in that episode with Lacey.
Okay.
So Rumpelgold
you're
is
right.
ordering the cheeseburger for, and Lacey turns it down because it's not, oh, why would you eat this?
I forgot about that.
Right. So it's her favorite food. She's so depressed. She's so upset. She can't eat her favorite food.
And they tried 4 times in a week. What, are they trying to kill her? she must have, like, special magic protection against clogged arteries.
It's a fairy tale.
And then I love the part where Grumpy enters with Ariel, and it's no shoes, no, what is it? No shirt, no shoes, no service. Yeah, since when do you have a dress code? I remember some of Ruby's outfits that are still seared into my brain. That was the funniest line of the season.
I laughed out loud when he said that.
They are just having so much fun right now with these one-liners. Yes. Zing!
It was so brilliant.
But I think that's what was nice about this episode being in Storybrooke is that they got to, I don't say relax a little bit, but you had a lot of interaction and fun, you know, with all these different characters. And on Neverland, you've been kind of stuck with the same 5 or 6 people.
Yes.
Being angry with each other.
Right. They're all so serious. And Hook used to be funny, but now that he's in love, you know, all the fun is gone. He's like this, oh, I gotta win her heart.
I'm going to fight for you. Yeah. Oh, please, can we just stay focused here?
Give the man a Wookiee. Really. Anyway. So now Belle can finally help. She gets that sand dollar. Now I get to play this clip, I think. Here we go.
A sand dollar? What am I supposed to do with it?
Don't ask me. I'm just the delivery girl.
I think this is actually later on in the episode, but who cares?
Looks like you figured it out.
Belle. I hope you raised the cloaking spell. The people headed for town are far more dangerous than even I first believed. They're unwitting pawns in Pan's game. I told you I was going to my death. I found another way. I can defeat Pan and live, but only if you get me something from the shop. The object I need is hidden, but I know that with the strength of our love, you'll find it.
He's really into being cryptic, isn't he?
Belle Kenobi, you are my only hope.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say as well.
It's a magical hologram. And it even has the little distortions of the video camera not functioning quite correctly.
It cannot be otherwise.
But anyway, that's fun. I've never seen a magical hologram in the series before. So that was pretty cool. Works very well. And he's still very cryptic. Yes, you'd think that the whole thing was kind of encrypted, so he could speak whatever he wanted, say whatever he wanted to say. But Belle still has to do a little bit of work to find out what he means. In the meantime, we go back to Snow and Emma now bickering. What is it? Nothing. You say a lot with nothing. I thought that was another great line.
That was a little too realistic, you know? I don't need realism in my fairy tale.
No joke.
But pretty good writing. I liked it. And then Peter Pan is talking about Henry, and Henry seems to rebel against, you know, being held there. And he's like, Peter Pan is lying to me, because he knows, of course, that his parents are on the island and looking for him. Peter Pan speaks with Felix. So Felix is here losing him. And Peter Pan's like, you know what? You know, given his lineage, I expect nothing less. It just requires some effort. What would he be referring to? What's the lineage? Is he just referring to Rumpel?
No, remember, Henry is the descendant of dark and the light. True love and true evil.
But it's also his mother, of course, has this lying detector skill. Hmm. And so maybe he inherited that as well.
But his mother is Emma, and she's the product of true love, which is the greatest magic in the world. And his father is Bay, and his grandfather then is Rumple the Dark One.
Okay. Although, yeah.
Although Gold Rumple wasn't the Dark One when he conceived and had Bay, but
perhaps he's referring to Bay mostly because Bay was on the island and was probably also a piece of work.
No, I think the lineage comment is more towards the true love magic, that it's the most powerful magic of the world. He's half of him is this ultra pure, trusting, truest believer. So they're going to have to convince him. They're going to have to lead him astray. A little bit more difficulty. He's a truest believer, but he's not just going to believe anything. I mean, he knows. He can sense that they're misleading him. You're hiding something from me.
Right,
we're going to have to step it up a notch. We're going to have to convince him. And the rest of the interaction with Henry is all about them selling him a lie to get him to do what they want him to do.
Yes, alluring him in. And first, a while ago, he tried to lure Henry into violence and, you know, giving into the dark side. And apparently now he's got a new plan, or perhaps it's just part of his plan all along.
So did they totally forget the whole taking the lost boy's heart and sending him to go give a message to Henry? So why is this lost boy gone? It's absent. We haven't seen him try to get another message to Henry.
Yeah, you're right.
It's been totally lost. I mean, it just dropped. Doop, disappeared.
Yeah.
And well, I think it would be much too better easy if they kept using it, you know?
I hear all sorts of magical sounds in the background.
Sitting here and my phone's making all sorts of noises. Sorry about that.
It's very, very magical sounds. But
that would be too easy if they could just call on this lost boy every time they needed something from Henry.
Because
this episode wasn't about them communicating with Henry. It was about Henry. And, you know, I was glad to see, because a couple episodes ago when they did the whole lost boy dance around the fire thing, we were worried if he was going to be converted too quickly. And so it was nice to see that he still don't believe him. You know, he's good. And that Pan realizes that. It's going to have to work
out. I still feel that in this episode, Henry, again, was a bit bland, a bit, you know, like give the boy a bit more character. Perhaps they don't want to. I'm not even sure if the actor could pull it off.
Maybe they're prepping him for the finale.
Perhaps. I just felt that it was like Henry is a bit the Tintin of the series. Like, there's really nothing nothing too exciting about him, and his role in the story is very limited. And it's, you know, what makes a series and the story interesting is all those weird people around him, and he himself seems to be so kind of, I don't know,
the eye of the storm,
non-eventful. The eye of the storm, that's a good metaphor. Anyway, perhaps next week. So Emma is clearly fed up with the darkness, and so are we. So she hears about this new place that they have to go. Dark Hollow. Why can't it be called Sunshine Valley or Rainbow Cove?
I got to confess, I did something when she said that.
Yeah.
I went and Googled Neverland maps. I'm like, is there really one there?
Oh, really?
That'd be funny.
Was there? No.
No.
No. Rainbow Cove.
Mermaid Lagoon, and
it could have been part of the story, because they definitely feel like happy places in fairy tale universe. And then we go back to Ariel and Belle, now in Mr. Gold's shop, and then there's a little hidden Easter egg. Did you notice? Like the first thing that Ariel says.
Oh, the screwdriver. Corkscrew.
Yeah, but what's the first thing she says? Look at this stuff.
Oh.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. I love it.
She pocketed it and put it in her bag.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? And then, of course, it's not about the screwdriver or the other, what else? The corkscrew and then the button. But it is about the thing that is hidden in a secret, what is it? Well, it's not a cabinet, but how do you
a
call
cupboard.
That? Like a cupboard under the floor. And it turns out to be Pandora's box containing world's darkest evil. Nothing less than that. Just hidden there on the floor. It kind of sounds dangerous, and I love that line of Ariel, like, shouldn't you be wearing, like, gloves or something? I was thinking the same thing.
Did you notice the Alpha and Omega symbol
absolutely, on it? Absolutely. Yeah. And I have a theory about, well, a theory. I've got some ideas about that. But perhaps for our listeners, since this is Secrets of Once Upon a Time, and every once in a while we actually get a chance to do some digging into the origins of the ideas that they bring about. So let's talk a bit about Pandora's Box. As many of you might know, this is from Greek mythology. Actually, this is part of the myth of Pandora's creation in Hesiod's Works and Days. Of course, I know all that by heart. No, actually, I'm reading this from the Wikipedia page. The box in Greek actually was called pithos or pythos, and that's not a box. It's actually a jar. And it was given to Pandora. So the story is Pandora was the first woman on Earth, and Zeus ordered Hephaestus, the god of craftsmanship, to create her, which he did using water and earth. And then the gods gave her all sorts of gifts. So they all teamed up like Avengers to clothe her. So Athena clothed her, Aphrodite gave her beauty, and Hermes gave her speech. So she was, you know, quite well equipped to enter Earth. But then things go wrong because Prometheus steals fire from heaven. And then Zeus is like, okay, I'll get back to you. And he does so by presenting Pandora to Epimetheus, who is Prometheus' brother. And in order to avenge, or, well, to take vengeance on Prometheus by means of his brother, he also sends the beautiful jar, the box of, or the jar of Pandora with her, with instructions to not open it under any circumstance. Yeah. So what does she do? She opens the thing. Why not? I mean, it's apparently as old as humanity. It's like, don't go there. In every horror film, you see the remains of this behavior. Yeah. Don't go. Don't look behind this corner. Just don't open that door. And of
don't
course,
push
what,
the button.
Don't push the button. Don't eat the fruit. Don't whatever. And of course, she apparently the curiosity was given to her by the gods as well. So, you know, she was kind of rigged by Zeus. So she opens it, and all the evil inside the jar escapes and spreads over the earth. So this is a kind of an origin story in Greek mythology that has quite a few similarities, of course, with the story in the oldest books of the Bible, where those stories too of Adam and Eve try to explain how evil came about, and then of course the biblical story is slightly different, but it is still by a human weakness in a way, by not obeying God, or in this case the gods, that evil is introduced in the world. And in this case, it was Zeus, the god himself, who actually wanted this evil in the world, which is slightly different in the Bible, where, of course, God did not want evil to spread. However, this is very interesting. This might also be interesting for the role of Pandora's box in the show. Once all the evil has escaped, there is still something inside the container, and it's on the bottom. And it is the spirit of, and here it comes, hope, named Elpis. Now, we know that hope is a super, super important theme in Once Upon a Time. So could they be, you know, alluding to that as well in the television series? We will see.
I've been wondering. Go ahead, Inga, sorry.
It's called Pandora's Box, and so he wants to give it to Pan. So I found that funny.
Oh, like Pan?
Pan's box of Pandora.
So will this mean that this season we will also see Dora being interested? Maybe. Is Dora also Disney?
Dora.
Pan and Dora on an adventure.
Happily ever after. How do you call that? Yeah.
Oh, I have kind of a theory that, I don't know, it just is coming to me as you're talking about this, Father.
Sure.
If hope is the only thing left in the box, And Pan wants the box. Not Pan wants the box.
Rumple
wants this box to give them all hope. His hope is the only way to defeating Pan. I keep wondering if Pan's motives are purely evil. I mean, is there any other reason? I mean, we don't know what he wants from Henry, first of all. And is there any reason to believe that if we give him what he wants, that it will all unravel and turn out okay in the end? You know, they've set him up to be evil, but I just, every once in a while, I wonder.
They seem but to, then, yeah.
But then thinking about the fact that Rumple feels that now he knows the only way to defeat Pan is the hope that I expect is in Pandora's box.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, there is definitely also evil in the box. But perhaps, and we were led to believe that Rumple is going to use the evil that is in the box, but perhaps he knows more. Perhaps he knows that there is actually also hope in the box.
But the box has already been opened. If you believe him, if they knew it was Pandora's box and the story is right and evil exists in the world, Pandora opened the box, and when she realized what was in it, she closed it. But the only thing left that hadn't come out was hope.
Well, but
so
but,
you could argue that hope is the
true,
only thing left
true,
in
that,
the box.
That is actually a very good point. However, Bell still believes that it contains all the evil in the world. So perhaps it doesn't. I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, that's a very good theory, actually. There might
think,
not be
I
evil
think
in
Bell
the box.
Just read a book about Pandora's box, and she recognizes from one of her many books in her library.
That's what she says, right? She says, I've read about this, but I never thought it was real. So, yeah, good point. There might actually just be hope left in that box, and this might all be a setup of the writers to make us believe that there is actually just unspeakable evil in there, and then once it's opened, it's like, oh, very different. By the way, interesting little factoid, how did this jar turn into a box in history? It's actually the fault of a Dutchman. It was Erasmus of Rotterdam who translated Hesiod's tale of Pandora into Latin, and then he made a mistake. He translated pithos from Greek into the Latin word pyxis, which means box. Now, pyxis is also used in Catholic liturgy. It's a little container that we use to bring the consecrated host, the body of Christ, to people that are ill and are not able to come to church. That also is called a pyxis. So it was actually this translation by Erasmus that made the readers of the Latin version believe that it was actually a square box. And then it was reinforced by a painter, an artist called Dante Gabriel Rossetti, who painted Pandora with a square box in her hands. And the box has all sorts of, you know, like carved paintings on it. And that kind of morphed into the type of Pandora's box that we now see in this television series. But it was indeed very interesting to notice that on the box, you can see two Greek letters, an alpha and an omega. Those letters are part of the Greek word Pandora. The A is the alpha, and the O is the omega. However, if you're a Christian viewer of this, you're like, alpha and omega, those are the first and the last letters of the Greek alphabet. And it is something that is used over and over again in the Bible to indicate Christ. Jesus himself says about him, you know, I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. Of course, referring to him being the Son of God. So he was there at the beginning of creation, before even creation started. He was there with the Father, and he will be at the end of everything when God wraps everything up. So he is the beginning and the end of everything, the Alpha and the Omega. So very interesting to see that they use that on Pandora's box. And even symbolically, it's kind of interesting because Christ in Christian theology is the one who vanquished evil, brought victory over evil by dying on the cross. So in a way, the box with the Alpha and Omega could almost be a symbol of Christ, you know, having imprisoned evil, you know, protecting us from evil, saving us from evil. So it's interesting. I was like, wow. I wonder if they did that on purpose or they just wanted to do something cool. I don't know.
Well, and the box itself was steampunk.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
You saw the little gears on there. I'm like, yes. Oh, steampunk. Very interesting.
And it might very well be that they are referring, or that they took the design from, you know, existing depictions of Pandora's box in comic books or in movies. I don't know. I didn't do extensive research, but it looks familiar to me.
I thought with the gears, it maybe originated from Dr. Will's realm.
Yeah, there's definitely something mechanical about it. So Will could be involved as well. Yeah, I don't know. It's fascinating. So that was the backstory of Pandora's box. I really am curious to know what's in there. But the two guys from in the red car don't want to find out. They want to destroy it. They know that they need a pickaxe, a dwarven pickaxe to destroy it, because it can also destroy diamonds and whatnot. So they are planning on getting the box and destroying it, and they tie up Belle and Ariel, hoping that they won't escape. That brought back memories of what is it, the third Indiana Jones movie, where Indy and his father are tied to a chair. And of course, they always know how to escape. In the meantime, Never Neverland, or is it Never? No, it's Neverland.
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 Never Neverland.
It's the Michael Jackson version, right?
Well, and that's why Michael Jackson actually had it Neverland. He had a Peter Pan fixation.
But was Neverland, right?
His is Neverland.
Oh, okay.
It's the Neverland Ranch.
Okay. Interesting.
But it's never ever been Neverland.
So it's never ever been Neverland.
Yep.
Okay. It just lives inside my brain, I guess.
Moving along.
Yes. So the plan of Peter Pan is now brought into play, and Felix is sent to the other side of the island to deliver supplies. But Henry is not supposed to know what the true plan is. Henry, of course, like a modern Sherlock Holmes, is trying to follow Felix. And of course, Felix pretends that he doesn't notice it. Henry does some really... All right, who is it, the actor who plays Henry? I always forget his name. But I didn't... Anyway, it was not very convincing. It almost feels like he's in a play on a stage, and it's so over the top. Oh, well. He does what he can, I guess. Snow is still bickering with Charming... Emma is speaking to Hook, and Hook is like, I want your heart, and I will not give up. Okay, and then they go to...
Really weird.
Hmm?
I want your heart.
Yeah, I want your heart.
I'm going to win your heart. Wow. And I'm thinking, yeah, you're not just going to reach in and grab it? I mean, we've got the history of reaching in and grabbing it.
Exactly.
I want your heart. That means so many different things in these
yes,
characters.
Yes, yes.
But it will not be because of trickery.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, that was actually nice. That was a nice referral to what their motto, right, on the ship. It's like, I want to have it. What was it, in good form?
Good form.
Good form.
Yeah.
But what do you believe in?
What he said just popped something in my mind, because he kind of says, I want you this time, not with trickery. It's almost like what I thought was, maybe a Pan sent him on a mission to retrieve Mila from. Rumpel, and that's the things gone bad mission. Mm-hmm. He was referring to in good form, so that Pan was a kind of a war with Rumpel, if he wanted something from Rumpel. Mm-hmm. And so he sent Hook to Rumpel's realm to just seduce Mila, so she would run off, so Pan could make Rumpel into the Dark One, so goad him into it.
Mm.
So that was what I was thinking.
That would be a very complicated thing to explain to simple mere mortals like I am.
Mila wasn't the reason that Rumpel became the Dark One.
No.
It was losing. It was
cowardice.
The prospect of losing Bay going to the Ogre Wars, and Bay dying.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's what made him finally stand up and become the Dark One.
But you, I keep thinking that definitely Rumple has to do with this. Well, you know, why is Peter Pan in the way he is shown to us? Rumple has to be involved in it somehow. But how, I have no idea. And well, Bay probably is also involved in this. So I guess they have something waiting for us there. Then they go to Dark Hollow. I don't know. Is that a reference to, like, the, what is it?
Sleepy Hollow?
Sleepy Hollow, or is it just... But I was like, is this coming from a story, or...
It sounded almost more like they were trying to make some reference to, like, a purgatory, because they said it's where the victims of Pan's shadows reside. They're forced to spend eternity in this darkness.
So it would be more like hell, if it's eternity.
Surprisingly, we could see
but
very
it,
easily.
Yeah, it wasn't very dark, was it?
It was red.
It was hellish red. Well, if it was totally dark, then, you know, people would probably switch to another channel on their TV.
Yeah. So,
but it did really have a lot of, like, hell symbolism, the red stuff, the spooky shadows. And who are these other two? The other two shadows? Did we get an answer?
She did say, Hook said, didn't he? He said they were go ahead, I'm sorry. Somebody has the answer in this room, and it's not me. But say it.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, I was thinking maybe it's Greg and Tamara.
He said that they were souls that the shadow controlled.
Okay, just right. Two random auxiliary.
He's controlling them.
Auxiliary
he's controlling
shadows.
Them. That's all.
Right. Yeah. And that's
because
why they
were
stopped.
Three people, and so there had to be three shadows to fight all three people.
Okay. So, well, anyway, we'll get back to the fight later on. But first, we go back to Belle, and she's kind of depressed. She's like, "Yeah, being a hero always backfires," and well, it did backfire. But she's now bound to a chair, so it's not really a huge hero. But fortunately, Ariel is there to save the day by flipping her fins. Well, stretching her fins. And taking off the wrist, and then somehow magically she was able to. I guess it's because her fins are very slippery that she could get out of the ropes.
They expanded so it broke the rope, and then she just kind of slid out because she wasn't bound at the bottom.
Okay.
And they fell over.
Yep. And now.
Well, I was more surprised that she could put the bracelet back on and get her legs back. I didn't, you know, if you took it off, it would break the spell.
Yeah.
Would it work again to continue the 24 hours, or could it be? Did it have to be uninterrupted?
Apparently, you can just switch it around.
Yeah, she put it back on, and her legs repair. Okay.
Yeah. It's like Skype credit. It only counts down when you use it. It's. So they both are able to get to the mines, and that's where are they? Oh no! That's later on. First, we go back to Snow and Charming. We're still bickering.
At least that was a good dialogue. That was a good. They had to have that discussion. I'm glad it didn't happen off scene.
Yes.
Because it really showed why she was mad at him. It wasn't so much the lying; it was the believing.
Well, and there was an interesting definition of, you know, what love is, and for Snow is like love is being together, and Charming is, well, love is also sacrifice. And I thought that was very nice. It's very well said. It is both, of course, being together, and sometimes also means sacrificing your life so that the other can live. And Charming was just scared, and Snow was mad because Charming didn't believe in us. So he lost faith in the strength of their bond, which has been, you know, her strong belief since the beginning. So, yeah, it's understandable why she was mad, and then they kiss and everything is all right.
But I suspect a lot of couples could identify with that conversation when two people have different expectations, different backgrounds, and being scared to tell another person something.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, it was... I still felt it was a little bit forced, but okay. Well, at least we're done with the bickering.
It was a little out of place. It was like they wanted to stick the scene in, but they weren't quite sure where or how.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to believe they're off looking for Tink, but in the meantime, we'll have this. We have to have this conversation and get it out of the way before we can move on to the what I'm hoping is, I don't know how many episodes are left, the big final battle.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess also they needed to resolve the tension between Snow and Charming so that they could create another one between Hook and Neil, who are now fighting over a lighter.
Oh, stupidest thing I ever saw. Stay focused, people. Come on.
It's kind of
the most dangerous place in the island, and you start fighting over a lighter. Really?
No, they're fighting over her.
Of course.
Yeah, I know, but still.
It was stupid. Hello, shadows coming, ripping your soul out.
Well, you know, in a way, aren't they just behaving as if they're boys again on the island? Which they both were. And perhaps they've been fighting like this as lost boys in the past. Or lost boys.
Well, Hook was never a lost boy.
No,
Hook
but
was always an adult.
But oh, was he? I didn't know that, actually. I thought he was, like, younger, too, when Neil was young.
Well, he should have been
younger,
a little
but
older.
Not. Okay. He was probably in his early 20s, and Bay was 14.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
So remember, he lived with them almost like a surrogate
actually,
father.
Yeah,
he is
true,
a stepfather.
True.
Well, we can call him immature. Let's just say it that way.
Yeah. Both are immature.
This is turning into
that's
a soap opera.
Kind of
what
interesting.
If she chose Hook.
Yeah.
And then so she has a son with the one guy, and then she marries a stepfather. It sounds like one of those soap operas where everybody's related.
Yeah, you don't want to think about it too much. It's
no.
like it's like Princess Leia kissing Luke Skywalker. Ew!
At least now we know why Regina had to teach Emma how to use that magic and put that little spark.
Yep.
She took all her anger and she just went, pyong!
I think that's what this scene was about, was Emma learning to trust, forget you boys that are being all crazy and let's just focus and do this. And
maybe
the way to do it, she had to believe in herself that she could do it.
I thought it was
that too, and it may also have been a primer for next episode. So I suspect that she needs to be using magic next episode in order to save Henry, so she now can practice it in kind of stressful circumstances.
And did you see how surprised Neil was?
Yes.
Yeah.
Regina's teaching you to use magic.
That can only
end
like,
badly. Do you know what happens when people use magic? Just saying.
It's like playing around with a lighter. But she manages to catch the evil shadow of Peter Pan. I actually thought that shadow fight was pretty good. I mean, it looked scary. Yeah. It's like, oh, that looked so painful that your shadow is being ripped out of your chest. So that was kind of nice.
We did have a little debate.
I thought she was
going
to have to choose
house.
Between the two of them.
A debate?
That's what we had a debate. Which one? Like, which one do you save? We're like, I don't know. Well, let's see. There's Hook, but then there's Neil. We're like, you know.
Actually,
we finally decided she'd have to save Neil because he was Henry's father and Henry wouldn't forgive her. But that was our, you know.
Good point. But actually, that would have been interesting if she had to choose right there and then who to save.
Yeah.
Narratively, that would have been very strong, but no, we don't have time because we need to go back to the mines where we still need to know who these two guys are dressed in purple for some reason. And it turns out they are actually the boys that are trying to save their sister, Wendy, who has been kept alive, and so have the boys been, by Peter Pan for over a century. Now, some people are like, Peter Pan can't be evil. I was like, if you imprison a girl for a century, you're evil.
In a small cage?
You're evil.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she seemed
cage.
Awfully compliant for being caged for 100 years in a cage.
Mm-hmm. We don't know how long she's been in the cage.
True, but I'm sorry. You put me in a cage for, I mean, she's been there for at least a couple of days. I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh, sure, whatever.
Yeah. No wonder she got sick.
Did you notice that Michael and John Darling both said we tried to be heroes, but we just made things worse?
Yes. Kind of discouraging Belle to be a hero.
Yeah, also, the reference, I was thinking maybe they tried to save Bay after he was taken away by the shadow.
That's what my family thought.
Say again?
Yeah, that would be good.
I think they have been trying to save Bay because Bay was captured by the shadow to.
Of course.
Instead of Michael, I think.
Yeah, my daughter said that she said Neil went to Neverland to save Wendy's family to keep them safe from the shadow. So, what if the reason Wendy and went to Neverland was to try and save Bay?
Hmm.
We'll just have to wait and see on that.
Yeah. And then Wendy is released from the cage, and she's like, "Oh, you're setting me free. No, but you can come out to play," which is a very Peter Pan thing to say, but in this context, very creepy.
Well, everything is a game to Peter Pan. Yeah. Everybody knows that? Everything.
He is a master manipulator. My kids kept going, "He's really smart." I'm like, well, that's one way to call it.
Yeah. But I have to say, the actor who plays him, it's out of this world.
Oh, he's great. He's great.
It's, yeah. It's almost sometimes it's like I'm really watching a kid act like this. Mm-hmm. Because he acts like an adult.
Well, but he's a British kid. That explains it. No, he's absolutely one of the best actors. And the contrast is painfully clear when we see him interacting with Henry, where he's like, "You, come on, guys." then Henry picks up the satchel from Felix, which I thought was a bit naive. I mean, he's read so many stories, and he's been involved in Operation Cobra for goodness sakes. So couldn't he just see that this was kind of a ploy, that he's being tricked? I don't know. But anyway, he climbs up the ladder, meets Wendy, is clearly infatuated by Wendy because he's got a red cheek. So he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna save this princess," and Wendy's like, "The island's power is fading, and for some reason I'm affected the most. Well, I've been locked up in a cage for a week, so yeah, I've got probably an infection." And then Henry's father helped Wendy's brothers at one point, so that's an interesting tidbit of information. So Bay helped Wendy's brothers. I don't know.
We have seen this.
Oh, have we?
Yeah, but that's how Bay, in the first place, got to Neverland, because otherwise the Shadow would have taken Michael.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he was living with their family.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Henry is convinced that Wendy is telling the truth, and why should he not be? I will come back for you. And Peter Pan needs Henry to believe in him. That is the revelation of what he needs Henry for. He needs to believe in him. Why? We don't know. Then we go, finally, back to Rumpel and Regina. We've not seen enough of Regina in this episode. Rumpel is in love with Belle, Regina notices. Really in love with Belle. Yeah, says Rumpel. Isn't that jealousing? And then Regina's like, what do you mean? Like, Belle? Like, no.
It's like, and I like the way she said that. She said, "Are you sure your feelings for her aren't blinding you?"
Yeah.
And he said, "No, my feelings are illuminating me."
That's nice.
That love illuminates.
And then you see her look when he says, you know, "No, jealousy, I mean, meaning having someone." And then Regina
is setting us up to go back to Robin Hood.
Yep.
Sure.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. He's the true love. This needs to happen at one point. And now, as a reward, Ariel can have the bracelet, and it has now unlimited credit. So she can switch back and forth between being a mermaid and legs, whatever Eric is into these days.
But she doesn't tell him who Eric is or where he is.
I know.
Well, I thought that was funny. She's in Storybrook. You don't look him up. You don't ask around. Hello. Anyone see this Eric guy? He's a prince? Because everyone knows. I'm like, they have their memories.
She said Eric, and she said that comes after you've succeeded. Your incentives are important. But then when she comes back, she gets the bracelet, but they don't tell her where to go to find Eric.
Well, that's true.
Well, they already told her. He was in Storybrooke.
He's in Storybrooke.
Well, I know, but my goodness, doesn't everybody come into Granny sooner or later? You seen this Eric guy?
I still think he's working in that fish restaurant.
What's his name?
He kills all the fish.
Cinderella's friends.
Yeah, yeah. He's like,
he's gonna see her tail and go, "Oh, yay."
How many cans of tuna can I get out of that? I'm not sure if we're going to see that story in this episode, but I thought it was kind of, I mean, again, Regina, when she is in the episode, she's great. And then Emma finally resolves the love triangle by choosing Henry, the only love I have room for in my life. Yeah, and then to make it worse, you know, Neil agrees. Yes, well, that's the only good thing that we've... If that's the only good thing between the two of us, then we did pretty well. it's okay.
My guess is that whole episode with all of them fighting back and forth was for all those crazy rabid, I shouldn't say crazy, but all the rabid fans on the internet, you know, that are all trying to go, no, no, it's all about
the shippers.
Emma. Yeah, the shippers. It's all about these two. No, no, it's all about these two. So I think that whole part was kind of a tribute, but like,
don't you think it's coming back? I mean, it still feels a bit like this is a love triangle that is not truly resolved. It might be resolved for Emma, but it's not resolved for Neil and
Hook.
Oh,
no, it's not resolved at all. No. But I did think it was interesting. Hook's like, we have a dalliance. And I'm like, first of all, who uses that word?
I don't even know what it is.
A kiss is not a dalliance.
It was a kiss, and now it's a thing?
Yeah. I've got it. But let's listen to that clip.
I owe you thanks for being so understanding.
Understanding about what?
Emma and me.
Emma and you?
Our dalliance. You don't know, do you? Well, this is awkward. The two of us shared a kiss. Apologies, I assumed she told you.
Honestly, it probably slipped her mind. I'm kind of focused on getting our son back.
Of course.
Everything all right?
It can be better.
There it is, star map.
It's not a star map, it's what we're going to use to trap Pan's shadow.
Coconut. You daft.
You could have never landed on a pirate ship through a portal, but you draw the line out of magic coconut.
Oh, fair enough.
So where is that?
I love that line.
No, I did too.
Where did they get that whole idea of the magical coconut from? Is that something from Disney? Or?
I thought Monty Python, you know, the person who danced to a coconut house.
Oh, from the... when they're on the invisible horses? Or they do the...
on hobby horses.
Yeah,
but here's the thing: is like it was like a whole. It made it sound like they had this torrid love affair.
Yeah.
You know, right? And you're going, wait, wasn't it just like a kiss, like 15 minutes ago? I mean,
right. But isn't Hook just kind of exaggerating it because that's in his nature? I mean, it's a little bit, you know, the pirate behavior.
And then Neil bristles, and I'm like, dude, weren't you engaged to somebody who's trying to kill everyone like 10 days ago? Y'all are all crazy. Okay.
Hook is totally infatuated with Emma, apparently.
You are a pirate.
Yeah, that I am. But I also believe in good form. So when I win your heart, Emma, and I will win it, it will not be because of any trickery. It will be because you want me.
There you go. So... he is definitely going to try to win Emma's heart, and he thinks he's going to succeed. I don't think that's going to happen. I still think he's going to die, sacrificing himself because you know.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, yeah. I said last week. I don't know why. I had a theory, but I think he's going to sacrifice himself for some reason.
Because something to live for. He didn't have that at the beginning, but now he has.
He's all balanced now. I mean, there's no anger in him. It's like, oh yeah, he's got this little crush on Emma, but yeah, he can't have her anyway. So
little crush.
Can a character survive on just charmy wit and a nice smile?
I don't know.
Yes.
Wait,
he's in TV land.
David Charming, right there.
Yeah.
I think his role is over. There might be, I don't know, some reconciliation with Neil. I mean, after all, if he's the father figure, then of course he's going to let Neil have Emma, and then he's going to, you know, what is it? Jump on the sword or fall on the sword
to save
everyone. But that's what I think, you know.
Instead of Rumble. Rumple
cannot die. Come on, there would be no series on TV if Rumple is out of the picture. Rumple and Regina are here to stay. Those actors are very certain of their contract next year. But anyway, we go back one last time to Peter Pan and Henry. Oh, not before we actually see Tinkerbell arrive. Very, very briefly. So Tinkerbell is going to help them do what? I forgot. She's
like infiltrate Pan's.
Oh, yeah. Lead them to Pan's hideaway. And then Peter Pan and Henry speak, and of course Henry wants to save Wendy. He now totally believes that Pan imprisoned Wendy on purpose. And then there's this magical phone in the background, which leads us straight to, and the sound of the phone is coming from Skull Rock. Pom pom pom.
See that?
Is that Skull Rock?
Yes. Inside is where our salvation awaits. Salvation that only the heart of the truest believer can bring.
Me?
That's right, Henry. But I won't lie to you. It won't be easy. It'll require heroism and sacrifice. The only question is, are you up to the task?
Yes.
Of course he is. He's Henry. He is the savior archetype. He, of course, wants to save the universe. Now, here's my theory. Pan is playing Henry, clearly. So when he says salvation is in there and it will require heroism and sacrifice, and he wants Henry to believe in him, then perhaps Peter Pan doesn't want salvation. And this, whatever it is that's inside Skull Rock that could save them from the island, is specifically what Peter Pan tries to avoid happening. He wants it destroyed or whatever, and he needs Henry to accomplish that. Don't you think this is all a ruse to stay in power?
Yes. He said that he needed to control the heart of the truest believer. So I think the Skull Rock, having Henry go in there and believe and do what he wants. So it has something to do with, my guess is something about solidifying his control and all of that. You know, whether it's he can't die or get rid of, I don't know.
I wonder
Rumble,
if we'll,
you know, something.
I wonder if we'll
I
get
think
this.
So he'd be able to leave Neverland if people believe in him, if he exists fully. Then he will be able to leave, because I haven't seen any indication that
well, he did with the Pied Piper.
Oh, that's true.
I don't think that Peter Pan wants to leave at all. I think he wants to stay in power and have like perhaps even turn the rest of the world into Neverland.
It's a really good thing that he doesn't know how to just rip somebody's heart out of his chest, because that's all he has to do with Henry, just rip that heart out, and then he gets it.
Use it as a remote control.
But doesn't he know that? I think he does know that. It does. What I was thinking is maybe because Henry is the heart is that of the truest believer, is just he wants Henry's heart in so he may want to rip it out and place it in his own body or something like that.
No, I don't think so. I think he just wants the heart of the truest believer, but he wants Henry to believe in the wrong thing, and that will actually not bring about salvation, but damnation for the island, for the world, for everyone involved. That I think he is. Really, almost the emperor in the whole story. Again, Star Wars reference here. And we always thought that Rumple was the ultimate evil, but perhaps Rumple is just a Darth Vader who will actually destroy Peter Pan by throwing him into a pit at the end and not dying himself. And just before he does that, there is Hook, who takes over from Darth Vader, from Rumpelstiltskin, and picks up Peter Pan / the Emperor and hurls him into the depth and dies in the process. That's, I think, what's going to happen. Mind my words. It's all Star Wars. It's just
the hero's journey.
The hero's journey.
Yeah, I have this idea also that Peter Pan wants Henry to die. So that's what the sacrifice is referring to. I think Skull Rock sounds a little bit like Golgotha, because it's also a skull place.
Yeah.
And so that's a sacrifice. So if Henry is a savior, so if the savior gets sacrificed there.
Salvation on Skull Rock. That's totally biblical symbolism.
Yeah. Skull Rock is the pirate hangout for Disney.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of wondering if there's going to be something that will be lead to Hook's demise.
Oh yeah, makes sense. Hook's demise. I mean, and then Henry being the savior, dying on inside the skull. Oh boy, yeah, that actually would be great symbolism. And I'm kind of expecting something of an Indiana Jones type of journey on the inside of the cave, where, you know, remember the
where people eat soup with ice inside of it.
Soup.
You know, with the Temple of Doom. Yeah, all those creepy...
No. I was more thinking of what Indiana Jones has to do. Is it in the third movie where he has to, you know, step on certain stones and make the leap of faith, and then there's his invisible...
Drink from a chalice.
Indiana Jones. Yeah. It's Indiana Jones and the... it's the Holy Grail. Right, it's the last crusade.
So I think Henry's faith will be put to the test, and then he's led to believe that he's actually... or he's probably... faced with some impossible choice, and then of course Peter Pan hopes that he will choose the wrong thing and whatever. I think that we're going to see a Star Wars like apotheosis. I'm trying to use a difficult word here, but like a resolution,
apotheosis.
And a big finale of the first part of the season.
Well, it's the classic hero's journey. So the transformation, the resolution. Yep. I'd have to pull the notes again, but I think Father, you're right on track.
I think Hook is going to sacrifice himself to save Henry and to kill Peter Pan. Something like that. I mean, of course, there has to be an ultimate face-off between Hook and Peter Pan. That's kind of the best part of the Peter Pan story or movie. So, wouldn't it be awesome if that happened in Skull Place? Oh well, we'll see next time. Speaking of next time, there is a promo that I'm going to play, but before that, I want to thank everyone for listening, thank our panel members for coming on the show again, and as usual, leave us your feedback and comments either on the blog, which is onceuponatime.sqpn.com, or on our Facebook page, which is Once Upon a Time Secrets. So facebook.com/onceuponatimesecrets. I know it's a lot to type, but there is the magical sound of the magical ringtone telling us that it's time to play the audio of the promo.
Henry saves magic.
All new ABC next Sunday. It's their final assault.
It's time. Let's get Henry.
Their last chance to save their son.
You mind if I borrow this?
And the only way to win is to believe.
I need help. With magic? Follow my lead.
But if they fail...
Peter Pan will be immortal, and Henry will die.
Once upon a time. Well, that's a lot to look forward to. Unfortunately, we're running out of time to speculate about what we will see next week. But, you'll just have to tune in to another episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Well, that's all I had to say. Thanks again, Inga, Shelley, Lisa, and Deborah for being on the show. And hopefully we will find another time next week to get back online and talk about the next episode. I'm looking forward to it. It looks as if we're finally getting off the island, which is great. All right, see you soon. Bye-bye. Whoops.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.